You are tuning into Pro Bono Perspectives, live from Brooklyn, where the city never sleeps and purpose is more than just a buzzword. Pro Bono Perspectives brings together leaders that have traveled across sectors, industries, and experiences on their path to creating change for the communities in which they live and work. And I'm your host, Danielle Holly, CEO of Common Impact, a national nonprofit that designs skills-based volunteer programs that amplify the impact of social change organizations by harnessing the talents and the skills of private sector employees. I am lucky enough to cross paths with these leaders every day through my work with Common Impact and can't wait to bring you behind the scenes to share their stories.
I am thrilled to have on the show today Tom Crohan, Vice President for Corporate Responsibility and Government Relations at John Hancock. John Hancock is a close partner of Common Impact and recently helped us co-host our Skills for Cities Keeping Promises event, where we supported BIPOC-led organizations with skilled volunteering. And in his role, Tom oversees that sort of work, employee engagement work, all of corporate social responsibility strategy, sustainability, community investments, really large mandate. And personally, I just really admire Tom. He was one of the first of Common Impact's corporate partners that I spoke with following the terrible murders of Black Americans in the spring, when our team at Common Impact was thinking hard about if and how companies were going to follow up their Black Lives Matter narrative with action. And Tom really gave me hope in that moment with his clear passion, his commitment to racial justice, and to using John Hancock's platform to drive equity. He's one of the people that made me believe that it was possible, that we've got these corporate leaders with the intent, power, and resources to make it happen. Welcome to the show, Tom. So glad to have you with us today.
It's an honor. Great to be with you, Danielle. Thanks.
Let's start with your career journey. Now, right now, you're at John Hancock. You were formerly working in politics. You worked for late U.S. Senator Ted Kennedy for several years. And I know you serve on many nonprofits and committee and board positions. Tell us about how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, it's a story that I've actually probably changed in recent years, Danielle, that I used to start just what my post-college journey was like. And as you said, I went to the University of New Hampshire undergrad, majored in communications and political science, got an opportunity to intern for Senator Kennedy in the 2000 year, so presidential election year, and in New Hampshire, which was always interesting. And then ultimately, got offered an opportunity with him in August of 2000, worked for him for 8.5 years, which I'll come back to in a moment, and then was lucky enough to join John Hancock in the Corporate Responsibility Department in 2010. I've been with the organization for the last 10 years. But more recently, I tell my story and my journey through the lens of my experience with my family, because it really is grounding me in the work that I do and has informed so much of my life in a way that I haven't fully appreciated until I've become a parent myself. So both of my parents are blind, as I think you know, and they were born in the 1940s. Were part of tens of thousands of people who were saved by the incubator, but they hadn't yet figured out the oxygen level. So not a hereditary disease, blindness, but both of them were born several months premature, and ultimately their lives were saved by the incubator, but were blinded as a result of it. And so I'm one of three brothers. So we have three brothers. I'm a middle child and grew up with two blind parents, which as I get older, and especially now as a father of three boys myself, I can just appreciate but not fully comprehend how they did it. And so I didn't have to look very far for inspiration and look very far for kind of learning how to, you know, think about community and how to be a part of community all through growing up and being around my parents. And so my mother is now a teacher at the Perkins School for the Blind. My father's a professional pianist. Both of them never accepted when people said you can't. And I learned really, really important lessons, invaluable lessons growing up alongside of them. And maybe what the most important one is the power of empathy, making sure that in every role that I've had, not just professionally, but personally, that you think about the importance of every person counting, every person having value, and that every person should be treated with respect. And I've lived that professionally, but I truly live it personally. I just really am grateful. If you ask the teenage self or the 25-year-old Tom Crohan, I would have given you a different answer about my personal experience and probably would have shied away from talking about it, quite honestly. But especially in the role that I now have at John Hancock, where and we talk about equity and we talk about equality, totally different, you know, by way of lived experiences that some people have, especially when we talk about race. I'm a white man, but I can very much empathize and appreciate walking into a room and feeling different. And I live my whole life and still do to some degree when I walk into a room with my mother and father, you know, people look at us and look at us differently. And so I just, it's something that certainly shaped me, Danielle. So I start my journey now talking about my childhood and how that shaped me. And then certainly when I get into my professional experiences, September 11th, I worked for Senator Kennedy for 3 weeks and then 9/11 happened. And my first meaningful experience working for him and directly with him was he wanted to call all the Massachusetts families that had a tie to a loved one that was lost on 9/11. And my job at the time in September of 01 was tracking down information on family members and phone numbers and making sure that he got good information to allow him to call those families. And so right from the start of me working for him, it was about trying to problem solve and help people. And so, you know, fast forward a number of years, ended up starting a nonprofit organization for military families who had lost a loved one in Iraq or Afghanistan and did that with 9/11 families. And so when I left the Kennedy experience without fully appreciating it, I had community experience. I went to law school while I was there, so I ended up at Suffolk Law in the evening program and obviously did policy work and governance work for Senator Kennedy. But I came out of the Kennedy years. He passed away in August of 09, so I worked for him for 8.5 years and had an opportunity to think about what my next step was going to be and was lucky enough to meet Carol Fulp, who was a leader at John Hancock as part of just some networking that I was doing. And I didn't have corporate social responsibility or community relations or corporate responsibility or citizenship or whatever the naming function was at the time in my mind as something that I would 100% want to do. But Carol saw in me something that I didn't fully see in myself, just about the community experience. I think my lived experience with my parents I shared with her, and then ultimately the political side, which resonated with her as potential fit at John Hancock. And so I've been at John Hancock for the last 10 years, primarily in a corporate responsibility role with a team of tremendous colleagues, but also partner with colleagues in government relations based on my history. So excited about the work that we've been doing. And I'll pause there, Danielle, because I feel like I gave you a lot.
Yeah, you did give me a lot. And it's just, you have shared your background and your parents' experience with me before, but it makes so much sense that you would be successful in the roles that you have been with that background and empathy. And I'm thinking, you know, you and I had a chance to talk early on in both the pivot in this COVID environment, but also some of the murders of Black Americans that were happening this spring. And of the corporate leaders that I talked to, you just seem to understand and get it and be really committed to it at a human level, and that your background just explains how you were able to connect. And at one of the things that I've been proud of our partnership with at John Hancock and Common Impact is Skills for Cities, which we are fresh off the heels of. It happened about 2 weeks ago. Still drinking extra coffee these days to recover.
Great event.
And John Hancock was our co-host there, and the theme and the focus of the event this year was supporting racial justice and BIPOC-led nonprofits, and something that was personally important to you and important to John Hancock, and would love for you to just share, aside from just participating, you really helped us shape and host the event. Why was that important to John Hancock?
Yeah, well, in part, it was just pivoting is a good word based on this year and all that we've had to do and want to do as a response to responding to external events. But yeah, I think back on the conversations we had early in the year and thinking about where we can have an impact. And that really is what's driving our work. And in a really focused way now, especially around the issues that you cite. And one of the opportunities and one of the meaningful opportunities that we saw in Skills for Cities was engaging with you and serving you and your organization and the goals that you set out for that event. And I think it was a really important set of goals that you had just by way of supporting organizations that were focusing on racial justice or were BIPOC led. And we were already looking to do that, right? Like it was looking for opportunities to engage and to have impact in. And we've had a longstanding partnership with Common Impact that my team is really proud of facilitating within the company. And you can reflect on it probably better than I could, Danielle, but the journey that we've been on together, which is, I think, narrowing in on the impact that both of our organizations are seeking to achieve together, not just about placing volunteers and not just about serving certain organizations, but over the years, we've gotten more intentional about the impact that we're seeking to change and make an impact on. And my team, if they're listening, will ultimately roll their eyes at this. It's a line I stole from Jeff Schwartz, so I'll cite him for the public record. But he talks about, and it's resonated with me, that we should all strive to be problem solvers and not program funders in philanthropy. And if you just step back and think about impact, it really should be driving all of our action and all of our resources. And so we just saw Skills for Cities, and I think it bore out to be true, as a tremendous vehicle and an avenue for us to make meaningful impact. And we have the benefit of a partnership that goes back many years. So there was trust built in that you would execute on it. But in all things that we do, we don't want to just be the sponsor or just be, you know, recognized by name. We want to be partners. So glad that Seth and others on my team were able to participate with you and your team and bringing to life what I think was a tremendously impactful event for the organizations that participated and just as equally for the volunteers that participated. And as you note, I was proud to be one of them.
You were. And, you know, it's such an important mindset shift, I think, that you're calling out, and that is happening within philanthropy and corporate engagement right now, which is moving from an arm's length funding and resource providing to really sitting at the table with community experts and figuring out together how set of resources that you all have can come together to solve these challenges that feel so large, but really the solution starts in those micro conversations and in increasing, as you started with in our conversation, starting with empathy, right? And really understanding that people are people and we're actually not as far apart as the headlines would have us believe. And I was so happy to have you as an actual volunteer during Skills for Cities, because we find that moment when folks step into the role of skilled volunteer or participate in one of these events, that there's just a realization around how that can happen, right? How these conversations actually can be game-changing and not just solve the immediate organizational challenges at the table, right? Where nonprofits are connecting with corporate employees for some capacity building challenge, but it's more systemic than that. And it gets to that mind shift that you were talking about. And what was your experience actually being on these teams? You were partnered with an organization called the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts, which I imagine is one that had been on your radar before. What was your experience like?
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second, Danielle, but something you said struck me. And I think the other word that I would use in all of this work, for me especially, but I think for anybody in a position like the one that I sit in, is humility and understanding the strengths you have, but acknowledging the strengths that others have. And so I saw that play out. I expected to see it play out, but I saw it play out in that way in the conversations and in the team that we had with Skills for Cities. And so, you know, we talk a lot about in our diversity, equity, and inclusion work, and, you know, not just at John Hancock, but in society, in the world, how we're better organizations with a diversity of thought at the table. And that was certainly true within our team at Skills for Cities, where, you know, we each had our unique lived experiences, unique work experiences, and then, you know, had perspectives about what, you know, the problem was first and foremost, but then ultimately what the set of solutions could be. And they differed and they varied as they should based on the perspectives that everybody brought. But it was a really interesting experience. As you said, I'm familiar with the organization. We've done some work with them, not a lot of work with them. And it was a marketing challenge, which admittedly is not my strength. And yet we had some tremendous people on the team. Danielle, one other quick note is it was interesting and I think a real opportunity. I'd be curious if you agree with this. I know we talked about it ahead of time as an opportunity, but there were people that weren't just geographically together. You know, there was somebody on the call from Charlotte, somebody from Philadelphia, several from Boston, some from Western Massachusetts. So the virtual event actually enabled more participation than probably otherwise would have been able to be brought to bear if it was just an in-person event in Boston. So that was kind of neat and cool to see in action, as we've all experienced in different ways over the last 8 months with COVID and work from home for so many of us. But yeah, it was just the ability to be a part of a team trying to problem solve. I think there's something really compelling for me, at least, that I enjoy just around. I don't know if I never did consulting, so this is just my assumption of how it works to some degree, is just you kind of go in, you come in, you try to work on something, and then you leave. And so there's some freedom to that where you can give some very unvarnished opinions and feedbacks and criticisms and hopefully helpful insights throughout the course of the day, but ultimately working towards a solution that will help an organization doing meaningful work do it with more impact. And so, yeah, just a tremendously meaningful experience that anticipate sustaining some of the relationships both at the organization level and with the team far beyond just that one day.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think so much of particularly the day of service consulting models are so helpful for just that fresh perspective, right? Even if you're not a professional marketer, you have a point of view and a perspective that nonprofits are trying to resonate with. And I've been on the receiving end myself as a nonprofit leader, where I'll talk about what Common Impact does and I'll have a skilled volunteer look at me like, what the heck did you just say?
Words that
mean a lot to me, but not to a mainstream audience. So it's fun to hear.
Well, it's just, yeah, I mean, you're also on the organization side. I think you're not as limited about, you know, there's just an openness. You have to go into it with some level of trust on both sides, and yet you're not inhibited by the limitations that you know exist within an organization. You know, my CEO may want to do this, my board may or may not want to do this, my staff can try, like any of those things kind of go out the window. It's just, here's the issue, here's the challenge, and not suggesting that at some point you don't have to address those issues that may or may not be there within organizations, but we all deal with them and they're all, you know, complex within each of our roles that are going to need to be addressed at some point. But yeah, those kind of one day hits are fun in that regard, because you're not limited by what the normal, we can't do this because it's kind of a fresh perspective. So yeah, definitely appreciated that. And I think the organization benefited from the feedback that we offered, and I hope they did. I trust they did.
So tell me more about what John Hancock is doing beyond Skills for Cities. I know that's just one small slice of how you're thinking about your approach to racial injustice, and you're thinking about it on the business side and on the community engagement side. One of the programs that we've talked about over the years is the MLK Scholars Program, which I know, and rightly so, you're really proud of. Share a little bit about that program.
Thanks. Yeah, one of the, you know, interesting things about this environment, and there's, I guess, some pride in this, but certainly not pride by way of we've solved any of the issues. Obviously, all of the issues that we've seen over the last 8 months are just shining a spotlight on issues that have been here for years and decades. And so, but some pride in that we haven't pivoted what we were trying to do from a philanthropic perspective and from a business perspective. We've certainly tried to deepen it and strengthen it and act with more urgency. And at a minimum, sustain what we had previously been doing. But, you know, John Hancock's mission in the community is fostering healthier and more equitable communities. And so that was the case, you know, going into 2020, and continues to be the case. So a lot of our partnerships, a lot of our programs don't look all that different. And MLK Scholars is a really good example of that. There are other elements of the business, which I'll touch on, that I think are critically important that need to be, you know, highlighted and should be highlighted within our organization, and then important advocacy work that we are looking to connect with other organizations on. But MLK Scholars is something that's been in existence for 13 years. So it predates me at John Hancock. It was started by Carol Fulp. And I'd say every year we get better at running a program. And so MLK Scholars is the name of a cross-sector collaboration that John Hancock leads with Partners Healthcare, the largest employer in the state of Massachusetts at the front lines of the COVID response, the Boston Globe, the city of Boston, and Boston University, a great university in Boston. And it provides, John Hancock provides jobs to Boston teens working at nonprofit organizations primarily. So in a typical year, it's a little bit north of 600, you know, close to 600 work at nonprofit organizations with funding provided by John Hancock. So organizations apply to John Hancock in like the December, January time period. We make commitments to those organizations, and then they use our dollars to go out and hire a young person to work in their organization and have the flexibility to identify and hire that young person. So it's really empowering those organizations to hire young people. And then once they're in our program, we tie in financial literacy resources, digital financial literacy resources with a great company called EverFi, which does a lot of digital learning platform work with companies and organizations, and they're a national organization. We partner with them with our MLK Scholar program. And then we historically do in-person leadership development programs at Boston University, where we bring all 650 or so young people to the university to learn from and hear from leaders in the community and the business and civic. We've had Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley joined us a couple times prior to her being Congresswoman. She was a city councilor and just was an amazing speaker. We've had, you know, just leaders across all spectrums of life just come in and spend time with our students, and then have 50 or 60 volunteers that facilitate conversations with them. So we couldn't do that as we normally would based on COVID. And we were planning on doing the program as we had done it previously. And then COVID hit in March, and so we had to pivot. We were able to work closely with our partner nonprofit organizations, and then ultimately closely with BU to pull together our leadership programming virtually. And then the students primarily worked virtually with nonprofit organizations this morning. So just tremendously proud that we were able to sustain a program, a meaningful investment that John Hancock makes in the community in an area that could have easily been disrupted, and we could have stepped back and people would have understood why we leaned in. And credit to my team, Annie Duong Turner and Shelby C, and too many to name, that just stepped up and figured it out and worked in close consultation with the city of Boston and the mayor's office. Mayor Walsh is a tremendous advocate, as you well know, for young people in the city, and has been just doing a great job responding to COVID. And it just was a great example of organizations coming together with an outcome in mind that they wanted to achieve, but not really clear understanding of how they were going to do it. And just day by day, decisions were made to move the program forward alongside others across the city to ensure young people had access to opportunity. And boy, is it more important now than ever to make sure young people, especially in the communities in which we're serving, have access to opportunity. And there were barriers before COVID and the issues that we just are so well attuned to now around racial justice. And those barriers are even greater today. So it requires all of us to work with intention and purpose to make sure we continue to provide access and opportunity to young people. And I'll just conclude, Danielle, just by saying, as proud as we are about MLK Scholars, and we're really proud, we've been operating it for 13 years, and the issues around inequality are greater today than they arguably were 13 years ago. So the problem exists today, and we still need to continue to focus on what the solution is. And it's going to, you know, John Hancock alone is not going to solve any of these issues. But I'm optimistic that with cross-sector partnerships, with creative solutions, with more intention and more focus, and dare I say, more resources, we can continue to make impact. So I was just really proud that we were able to make it happen this year in the face of tremendous adversity. And I see it in the survey results from young people and the managers of the organizations. And within John Hancock, we had 35 or so students that worked at John Hancock this year, all virtually. It makes me proud that we pulled it off. So thanks for asking the question.
Well, and just as I was hearing you explain how the program works fundamentally, but also how you were able to pivot, it's clear that there are just some really intentional and deep partnerships involved in that, right? Public and nonprofit partnerships. And how do you think about developing those partnerships? I know from, and I'm partly leading you here because I think in my conversations with you, you just have a really sophisticated way of thinking about partnerships, and you really push against the traditional power dynamics that can exist. And, you know, I've been in conversations with you this year where we weren't able to do the things that we had blue skied at the beginning of last year because the world changed. And you very quickly said, let's
forget about what was on paper and let's think about how we can make the most impact together. And that comes through as you talk about how you operationalize some of these programs, and would just ask that you share, you know, how do you think about that? How do you approach these partnerships? How do you break down those dynamics that exist?
Well, thank you for that. That means a lot. And I think if you just take a step back, it's the same question that we ask ourselves internally too, which is just, what are our core capabilities? You know, what are our core capabilities that we can put to bear to solve whatever the challenge is, whether that's for our customers, our employees, or for our community partners? And I think if you take that same question and apply it externally in the community, we have a lot of capabilities, and my team, the money we have, the skills that our volunteers can bring to bear, but there are limitations too. And acknowledging that, and then embracing the fact that others can bring those capabilities to bear in a way that can affect change and move the dial significantly on an issue that you work on or care about. Like, you're the expert in skills-based volunteering, so we lean on you. And you know, Skills for Cities is a great example of that in 2020. Within MLK Scholars, there's an organization called the Center for Teen Empowerment that is all about youth voice and empowering young people to be change agents in their community. And so we partner with them on our leadership development programming, and they've helped us establish a teen council that guides us in a way that 10 years ago we never would have thought to do. It makes perfect sense now, and we see the benefits of youth voice on the stage or on the screen this year, and they're helping guide us in making informed decisions. So I think ultimately, if you just step back and ask the question, again, going back to humility, I think it takes a healthy dose of humility to acknowledge that you don't have all the answers. And I think there's a freedom to saying that very intentionally to you and to others when you're having these conversations, because I don't dispute the point you make about power. And I think it's really important for those of us in a position of quote unquote power as a funder with nonprofit organizations, especially, to just take that and be very transparent about it, and to try to hopefully not allow it to be a barrier for meaningful partnership, because, you know, we're not going to have the impact that we want to have if it's us telling you exactly how we want you to run programs for us. It will be far more fruitful for us to have a conversation about the outcomes we seek to achieve, ideally together, and then to think about what resources we have, what resources you have, and then hopefully align on the impact that we can have together. And so that's generally the approach.
So give us your crystal ball for the future. I have been impressed with the corporate response to COVID and to racial injustice this year. It's been a pretty loud and open response, and it has a lot of what you just articulated, a lot of empathy, a lot of humility. There's been a releasing of restrictions and business as usual, partly because there's had to be, but what I was worried about and what I haven't seen yet is a pulling back and a focusing on business priorities in the context of economy that is not as positive as it was last year and for the past 10 plus years, where CSR really became what it is today. And would be curious, as you're looking ahead, what do you see as the future of CSR and corporate community engagement in our current world?
Yeah, it's a very good question that I will most certainly get wrong, but I'll try to give you some directional guidance based on where I currently sit, and I'll use some pieces of the puzzle over the course of my life and career to maybe help inform my thinking on this. One is, I'm an optimist, and so I've used a line now when I talk about my parents, and their life has really been defined by this. I think it's an old proverb that says it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Mm-hmm. And so there is plenty of darkness in our world today, no doubt. But if you have enough people lighting candles, I think it gives us good reason to be optimistic. I just read an article about President Obama and his new book. He talked about optimism, and he said something really profound that I'm not going to get exactly right, but we'll paraphrase. And it was just talking about timeframes matter as it relates to optimism. You know, if you have a longer term time horizon, it might lead you to be more optimistic about certain things. And so in the context of COVID and racial justice, I think one of the really exciting things that has helped dramatically is actually the urgency in which we're seeking and seeing action. You know, what might have otherwise thought, well, that's not going to happen for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, whatever the issue is, I think we've all seen a real focused attention and effort to say, no, it needs to be more urgent than that. This systemic issue needs to be addressed more urgently than we had previously thought possible. And so that to me is really exciting. That momentum needs to be sustained. One of the things, I'm sorry to keep quoting or citing political figures, especially one that is on his way to be the president, but Senator Biden, Vice President Biden, President-elect Biden, has said something that I use strategically at times internally, but I think resonates for all of us that deal in the realities of budgets. And he says, don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget and I'll be able to tell you what you value. And it just cuts right to it, which is we've seen, and I'm really proud of what John Hancock and our parent company Manulife are doing around diversity, equity, and inclusion and really leaning in. And our CEO, Marianne Harrison, is part of a CEO Action for Racial Equity. That's this extraordinary body that give a lot of credit to PwC and the leadership that they're providing, but it's 200 plus companies who have stepped in and offered fellows to work for 1 and 2 year assignments. Marianne is on the governing body. I'm her designee. And the issue that they're seeking to solve is racial equity and looking at different pillars, like huge issues, and saying, we're not going to be able to solve them alone individually as an organization. We're not going to be able to solve them as a private sector, but we can bring a lot of resources to bear collectively and hopefully be able to partner and, if needed, work, I don't know if an opposition is the right word, but look at policy. So no longer just along the four lines or four walls in an organization, but looks outside of our organization to see if we can solve some issues that have very clearly been laid to bear over the last 8 months. So just, I think there's a lot of really good reasons to be optimistic and see with real opportunity the commitments that have been made over the last 8 months. The key, obviously, is sustaining them. And I think that's going to be my job and the jobs of all of us in corporate responsibility to be a partner in that effort. And there's no question it's got CEO level attention for every organization across the country and arguably the world just around these sets of issues that have been so, again, I said it before, but challenging before the last 8 months, but COVID and the issues that we've seen around the mass protests around race and the killings that we've seen earlier in the year, it requires action and urgent action. And so I hope to be proven right with my optimism, but I know the challenges are very, very large. So look forward, Danielle, to be partnering with you and any other organization for anybody listening. If there's an opportunity for John Hancock or Manulife to think about partnership in a way that we're not currently thinking to solve some of the issues that we may have capacity and capability to solve, our door is always open. I always say to our nonprofit organizations, I'd rather know about something and have the opportunity to say no than to miss an opportunity to say yes. So welcome any and all ideas about how we can affect change together.
That's an amazing offer and call to action. I think the piece that feels so important to tease out of what you're saying in terms of John Hancock's response and your particular perch is the connection between business practice and business leaders and philanthropic and community engagement leaders, which doesn't always happen. It's happening more and more. And I think a great model on how to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I just add, Danielle, like there's, I mean, to the extent that there was a line between business issues and community issues or societal issues, and arguably that line has been getting blurrier and blurrier in a good way over the last decade plus, but COVID just, you know, that line just doesn't exist anymore. You know, the issues in the community are issues in the business and vice versa. And so, you know, stakeholder expectations have obviously risen a tremendous deal. And you see that in all the ways that ESG and sustainability is, you know, have been such a focus in recent years, and investors and customers and employees are all caring deeply about a set of issues that organizations are being held to a different standard than they were before. And there's a million reasons why, and most of them are really good reasons. But I think the same is true with COVID. And I think there's a lot of I hesitate to use this word because of all of the horrible things that have come out, including hundreds of thousands of people that don't have a loved one in their life anymore as a result of COVID. But I hope there's some good that comes out of it just around, you know, the importance of health and well-being, and, you know, the fact that all of us need to spend time, no matter what our role is, thinking about how we can be part of the solutions and part of the change. And again, just, you know, you can't say business sits here and community challenges, societal challenges sit somewhere else. Like those are very much interconnected. They always were, but it's even more so the case now, I would argue.
Well, I like your crystal ball and I subscribe to your optimism. I really, I'm seeing a lot of those themes across companies, but just in general, I think the obliteration of that line between what's good for business and what's good for people in society really has been laid bare this year.
I will say, Danielle, and you're in a better position or an equally good of a position to answer this question that I'll pose to you, maybe to flip the script, is I worry a great deal about the nonprofit sector, though. You know, that there is just tremendous strain as organizations respond, or as organizations aren't able to respond, if they're in arts and culture, as an example, you know, where it's just 2020 obviously presented loads of challenges. Nobody expected, you know, there's news of a vaccine. Hopefully that comes sooner than later. But 2021, I think, is going to be a really difficult year. You know, I do worry about the viability and the strength, not just of the organizations from a balance sheet perspective, but of their people. And there's just tremendous strain. Obviously, we see it in the hospitals and the responding life-saving care that they're doing, but, you know, extend that out to other organizations that are on the proverbial front lines. And it does give me worry. So I don't know. Obviously, one of the reasons we did what we did with skills-based volunteering with Skills for Cities was to try to support them and support that response. But just curious what you're thinking and what you're seeing too, through the lens of Common Impact.
This concept of a K-shaped recovery, where once we have a vaccine, there's an expectation that organizations of privilege, institutions of privilege, the private sector will have a accelerated recovery. And there are going to be organizations, largely the BIPOC-led organizations, the organizations that are so place-based and in-person based, or are really dependent on an in-person volunteer workforce, those are the organizations that have been hit hardest, that will continue to suffer in the coming year. And if there's one thing I've learned in talking to these organizations, is that you can't assume anything based on their mission, based on their operations, based on their executive director or their history on how COVID has impacted them and what they need to recover. You know, some organizations are in dire need of volunteers. Some organizations do they just need funding and they just need something to cover them until they can move back into a fully operational state. And so calls like the one you just made, Tom, I'd say are part of the answer, right? Like, come talk to us and our current partners, new partners, tell us what you need. And we will probably have to say no, right? But we want to hear. And it's raising those questions and those conversations and understanding what the needs are so that, you know, even if you have to say no, that your colleague might be able to say yes and been able to share what that need is. So I agree with you and I share your concern about the coming year. And this is in nonprofits usually, and this was true in 2008 as well, with the economic recession, is that the harder year for nonprofits was 2009. And I think that's going to be true again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all the more reason for us to be really focused on it. And so, yeah, I appreciate those insights. Very helpful, as always.
So from the macro to the micro, share with us, what's the best part of your day?
That's a great question. I said earlier, I have three boys, so I'll just keep it very micro, where I guess my work is my home is my work these days. And the blessings that come along with that are seeing my boys grow and develop and do new things and learn new things. And I can say definitively that we're grateful for all we have. And I try to impart the lessons that I learn and the stories that I hear into my kids and make sure that they understand their privilege and aren't ashamed by it, but recognize it and make sure that they're good citizens that live up to the values that we talk about a lot. And so that's the best part of my day, is just being able to spend time with my boys and my family. So grateful for every opportunity to do that. And again, one of the blessings for me, and I know it's not a reality for all, is more family time because of the last, because of COVID, with you know, far less time in the car doing commuting to and from work. So working hard, but also able to walk upstairs and see my boys. I just saw my son Jack is out. He's in kindergarten. He was practicing his rollerblading and hockey skills. So I did that shortly before we got on this call. So that was neat to see. So just those small gifts of life as a father, which I deeply, deeply appreciate.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Tom, for joining us today. It always feels too short. It always feels too short, but really appreciate you sharing a little bit about your background and what brings you to this work and how you do it. It's just so helpful to hear and appreciate what a model you are for this work. So thank you.
Right back at you, Danielle. I really enjoy the work we do together individually and then more broadly our organizations do together, and proud of it and proud to call you a friend. So appreciate having the opportunity to spend some time with you and wish you a great rest of the afternoon.
Thanks so much for listening to Pro Bono Perspectives today. If you like our show and want to learn more, check out our website at commonimpact.org. Leave us a review and tell your friends and colleagues about us. Tune in to our upcoming episodes to hear from everyday leaders using their skills to help their communities.